好的，那现在时间已经来到了下午2点钟，我们电话会议正式开始。F 搜索专业分享，价值创造。大家下午好，我是今天的会议主持人 Lucy。那欢迎大家参与本次电话会议。我们今天会议的主题是境外税制系列之洞悉美国联邦税制。那首先我们要感谢本次电话会议的服务商君纳斯公司为我们提供的技术支持。另外，我们 F 搜索境外税制系列的活动也已经持续了5个月了。从印度、新加坡、香港、台湾做到今天的美国，那接下来还有九月份的德国税制。在这里，我们衷心的感谢安永国际税务部对我们 F Council 境外税制活动的大力支持。接下来，我简单的给大家介绍一下我们这次电话会议的活动背景。那美国作为全球的经济中心，聚集了众多财富500强世界集团的总部，加之与中国的贸易往来频繁，因此一直是各位财税同行关注的重心。那么美国税制大致是怎么样的呢？在与中国的贸易往来中，常涉及的税种有哪些？在美国又是如何缴纳的呢？以及从美国的角度来分析，他们到底是如何看待转让定价的？我们 F-Council 今天也是非常荣幸的邀请到了安永国际税务部执行总监 David 来为我们广大同行通过安利的分享，安利的方式来分享关于美国税制的知识和税收筹划的经验，希望能够对大家有所帮助。今天我们这场电话会议预计1小时15分，前一个小时是我们的分享嘉宾为我们带来精彩的内容，那后15分钟是我们的互动答疑环节。如果大家有任何问题希望和他们交流的话，可以用中文或者是英文的方式提问，拨打我们的热线电话02162705678-1030，再重复一次02162705678-1030，与 F Council 的工作人员进行联系。接下来我为大家简单的介绍一下我们今天的分享嘉宾。那 David 现任安永国际税务部的执行总监，已经有超过10周年的关于亚洲和欧洲与美国联邦税之间的问题的处理经验。另外，他自2008年起就常驻于上海，主要从事的也是美国税务咨询服务，那主要包括控股公司的架构、代扣代缴税务的税收筹划、资本资产的规划配置以及并购重组交易的税务咨询。那在今天的会议中，嘉伟的全程是用英文讲解的，但在每一part结束之后，他的助理本会为他做一个简要的中文小结的翻译。另外我们做一个小小的提示，那由于David多年来一直专注于美国税务的处理，所以大家在稍后的询问环节中如果有涉及到在中国的涉税问题，那恐怕David无法和大家作答，但是如果是涉及到美国的涉税问题，那请大家随意提问。 Hi David。 Hello。
Hi Cici。
Hi, it's your time now, you can start.
Okay. Thank you for the introduction. My apologies for notknowing in Mandarin. In the 8 years I've been living in Shanghai, I have struggled to pick up the language, so I'll try to speak slowly and clearly, and I hope that for most or all of the audience that English is an okay medium for conducting this presentation. So as Cici mentioned, I'm a U.S. tax professional. I'm based in China. I spendalmost all of my time advising private equity clients, and I do a lot of work that relates to investing into the United States. But what I'm going to do today is step back a little bit from being that specific in terms of like an industry perspective and a transaction perspective. And I think what I'd like to accomplish in the next hour is to really give everybody an understanding of an overview of the U.S. tax system. I would imagine that many of the people on this call have probably encountered, you know, the United States in their work, whether it's dealing with a U.S. parent company or a U.S. subsidiary, or, you know, dealing with clients and customers that are in the United States. And so there's a lot of U.S. issues to deal with. So I'll provide an overview of some of the more important provisions in the U.S. tax law today, and I think at the end of this conversation there's a period for some questions and answers. So sitting on my desk here in my office in Shanghai, I actually have probably over 60,000 pages of tax law and regulations. The United States has one of the most developed and complicated tax systems in the world. I think you've probably been, if you follow the news, you've probably been hearing now for a number of years that the United States is due for tax reform. You know, no different than the tax reform that China had in, I think it was 2008. The U.S. is due for tax reform. The provisions are complicated, sometimes more complicated than they need to be. And so if some of the things I talked about today have been part of the discussion around tax reform, I'll make sure to point that out to you so you're aware of that. And just want to note that it's something that you should just be aware of. So I will start the presentation of, I'll just using page numbers. On page 6, there's a slide titled Overview of the U.S. Federal Income Tax System. And it's really a broader discussion than that. So categorically, and I think this is one of the differences between China tax and U.S. tax and, you know, even taxes in European systems versus the United States, is that under the U.S. Constitution, individual states are granted the right to tax as a sovereign political jurisdiction, independent of the federal government. And so a lot of what I do is I do federal tax planning. And so the primary category of tax that people usually deal with are the federal income taxes. And those are individual taxes, those are corporate taxes, employment and human capital related taxes. We do have an estate and gift tax in the U.S., and we also have excise tax. The discussion today is going to focus primarily on an overview of the corporate tax system. I think that's probably most relevant for this discussion. And I'll touch on at the end a little bit about individual taxes. But just so people are aware, because there often is some confusion around this, so separate and distinct from federal taxes, there is a state tax, and it's different depending on the state where you generate revenue or you have employees or you have assets. States can tax differently. States, like the federal government, also have income taxes and employment taxes. One thing that the states have that the federal government doesn't have is sales and use tax. Okay? And you know, one question is, will the U.S. ever move to a VAT type of system like we've seen happen recently in India, Malaysia, China, as you're well aware? So the question is, in the next, you know, several years, VAT has been brought up as a possibility for reform. I personally think that we're a bit away from that, but there is something similar to that at the state level, and that's the sales and use tax. And other than that, there's also customs duties. If you work for a company that imports products to the U.S. for sale in the U.S., you've probably had to deal with, you know, the customs requirements. There's tax on imports, depending on what's being imported. There's a process for importing. All of that falls within the jurisdiction of taxation. So moving to page 7. I think this is probably the question that the most people are worried about. You know, it's basically how much tax do we have to pay in the U.S.? And so page 7 is an overview of the U.S. tax rates. Corporate tax, 35%. We say 35%, but you should actually understand it's actually a graduated rate. I mean, those rates are as low as 28%. It depends on the level of income. 35% ends up, if you actually do the math on the different rates that are used, as soon as you have taxable income of just slightly over $18 million, your effective rate is 35%. And so if you ever have a conversation with somebody about U.S. tax and we say 35%, that's the rate that we use. There's actually a table of, you know, different income brackets. But we typically say 35% because that is the rate at a blended rate over a certain amount of income. But if you make you know, if you're a new business and you've got $1 million, your rate is actually going to be lower than 35%. So number one, I just wanted to point that out. Number two, capital gains are also taxed at 35%. So at a corporate level, whether the income is categorized as ordinary business income or capital gains income, the tax rate is exactly the same for corporate taxpayers. Individuals, and I'll come to this later, but for individuals, the rate actually does differ by almost 50%. So it's a real planning opportunity for individuals, but not for corporations. States. States, the rate varies depending on the state where you operate, the state where you generate income. Corporate taxes in states vary from, I would say, roughly from 0% to about 12%. I think as of now, and I'm not a state tax expert, but I've done enough of it, I think that there are 5 states right now that have a 0% corporate tax rate. The ones that I think people will be the most familiar with will be states like Nevada and Delaware. A lot of people will use Delaware entities, legally formed Delaware entities, for their U.S. operations. And more often than not, will mistakenly think that because you've formed an entity under Delaware law, that means there's no state tax liability. That's actually not true. And so states will usually tax based on where you have your employees, where you have your assets, where you generate your income. And so you can have for legal convenience and protection, you can have a Delaware entity, but all your operations can be in Boston or they can be in San Francisco. You will pay state tax typically in that situation. So just by virtue of having a Delaware corporation doesn't mean you don't pay state tax. I just want to point that out because that is a question that I get quite a bit. Withholding taxes, the statutory rate of withholding on a U.S. source payment, and I'll come to this later, is 30%, compared to what you see in China, 10%. I think the U.S. actually does have one of the highest domestic statutory withholding rates. 30% is actually very high. That can be reduced under some statutory provisions, or it can be reduced many times under a tax treaty. Again, that's something I'll come to later as well. And then customs and duties taxes exist. There are other types of taxes I have here, accumulated earnings tax. There's also something called alternative minimum tax. There are different types of taxes. The only other point I want to make on slide 7 is that there is a branch level tax. And so a lot of times the question is, if I operate in the United States, do I go in as a U.S. subsidiary or as a U.S. branch? And a lot of people think that, well, if I operate as a subsidiary, I know, as I just mentioned, there will be 30% withholding tax on distributions. If I go in as a branch, then arguably there is no dividend because there is no subsidiary, and so it's a branch. Technically, it's a branch remittance, not a dividend. And so that is true. There is no dividend withholding taxes. There is no dividend. But in 1986, basically, the United States, government came up with a solution to that in the form of what we call a branch profits tax that effectively taxes a branch remittance, so that the decision to operate in the U.S. as either a branch, a subsidiary, or a partnership isn't being dictated by tax considerations. So it puts everything on equal footing. Okay, so I'm now going to move to slide number 8. And despite the pace at which I'm going through these slides, I actually intended to purposely spend most of my time on these first couple of slides because I think these are probably the more important slides of the presentation. So let me just, to help people understand some of the key elements of the U.S. corporate tax system, let me do that by drawing a comparison to the China system. And especially when we talk about U.S. investing into China or China investing into the U.S., the differences in the U.S. tax system and the China tax system are oftentimes what creates an opportunity for some tax planning. Okay? So I'm going to walk through eight of these that I have here on the slide, some of which we've touched on briefly. So first of all, basis of taxation. I still refer to it as like, you know, the new tax law in China. It's not so new anymore, but under China tax law, you are a resident based on not only place of incorporation, but can also be place of effective management. So many of you will be familiar with, there's a China circular, and I think there's been a couple updates to it since it first came out, on something called a tax resident enterprise that will tell you that, you know, where you make decisions, where you have books of records, where your employees are. That could actually deem, for example, like a Hong Kong incorporated entity could be a China tax resident and have to file a China corporate tax return, no different than a Chinese incorporated entity. That's fundamentally different from U.S. tax law, which says that you're only a U.S. tax resident based on place of incorporation. And we'll talk about a permanent establishment later. But again, on the surface, only U.S. corporations are U.S. taxpayers. I mean, you can be a non-U.S. person and have a permanent establishment and pay tax, but I said we'll come to that later, but it's based on place of incorporation. I'll mention that because another question that I've actually had from time to time is people will come to me and say, you know, we're New York Stock Exchange listed, you know, and, you know, let's talk about the U.S. tax consequences of that. And as you know, maybe some of you are working for companies like this, but for example, if you list on NASDAQ, you can be a Cayman entity with a NASDAQ listing. The fact that you've listed on a U.S. exchange isn't what drives whether or not you are a U.S. corporate taxpayer. Again, based only on place of incorporation. The second item that I have here is the corporate tax rate. As I mentioned, 35%. And I know in China, 25% is the statutory rate, but there are, in certain circumstances, that can be reduced. I know there are things like the HNTE and the TASC, I think is another one that relates to technologically advanced services or, you know, new types of technology that you can actually get a 15% rate. That 35% rate is not something that is negotiable, or there are no sort of other tax rates that are available depending on the type of industry that you operate in or the business that you operate. 35%. States generally operate the same, but states are more flexible in terms of the incentives that you can negotiate. And so I had one client years ago, a copper company that was looking to build a facility in the United States, and anybody that works with state tax incentives will tell you, before you announce where you're going, or before you announce where you intend to build a plant, have a discussion with various state tax authorities first, because it gives you a lot more bargaining power. And so I have a client that ended up, you know, negotiating with one of the southern states about building this plant, and it meant that they were going to have capital spending, they were going to hire, you know, hundreds of people locally to work in the plant. As a result of that, the state came back with, you know, 2 to 3 pages of different incentives that they would offer in terms of land tax, rebates, you know, efficient financing, you know, tax holidays for, you know, a certain period of time. And I equate that to no different than how you would negotiate in Singapore with the Economic Development Board. The state governments have the same thing. They're incentivized for foreign companies to come build a presence in their state. So if that's something that you're considering, I would definitely suggest that you work with somebody like an Ernst & Young or another firm that actually provides that service, because a lot of benefits can be made available. The third point here is tax consolidation. I actually think tax consolidation is one of the more significant differences between the U.S. and the China tax system. If you have, and you'll, those of you who are listening will know this more than I do, if you have a Chinese company that is generating income of 100, and you have another Chinese company that has a loss of 200, you're still going to pay tax in China. There is no consolidation mechanism for offsetting that to an overall loss position that doesn't require a tax payment. It's the same thing. It's very different from a U.S. tax perspective. U.S. tax does provide for consolidation. The key requirement for consolidating is that you have to have U.S. domestic corporations that are tied by a direct 80% shareholding. So a U.S. parent that owns a U.S. subsidiary 100% can file a tax return on a consolidated basis, which means that transactions between those companies are oftentimes eliminated. There are some exceptions to that. But also the income of the two entities is reported on a consolidated basis and tax is paid accordingly. States also have, to a degree, the concept of consolidation. If you have a U.S. corporation that has a U.K. subsidiary that then has a U.S. subsidiary underneath it, those two U.S. entities are not entitled to consolidation by virtue of the fact that there is a non-U.S. corporation in the middle of the two of them. And the same goes for partnerships. If there happens to be a U.S. corporation that, say, is, you know, co-investing in a land development or a property investment with, say, a Chinese company, and they do that through a partnership entity, and the partnership owns a U.S. corporation, that underlying U.S. corporation cannot be consolidated with the U.S. parent corporation because there is a U.S. partnership in the middle. Now I say that because technically they can't consolidate, but by virtue of the income going through the partnership, I refer to that personally as effective consolidation, because effectively you get a lot of the benefits associated with consolidation, even though it's not a technical consolidation. And there is some planning that a lot of people can do around that. And the last point on tax consolidation I'll make is the U.S. consolidated system is different than what you find in other jurisdictions like the U.K. or Australia. The U.K. has something called a group relief, and you don't need that 80% direct control between two U.K. entities. So the U.S. in that regard has a more strict requirement when it comes to consolidation. Most clients that I have do consolidate in the U.S. Most practitioners will tell you what we'll recommend that you do consolidate. There are instances where some clients don't do this. I have some of the oil and gas companies that I've worked with before actually have separate consolidation for their oil and gas from their engineering and procurement activities, and I think a lot of that is driven for maybe non-tax reasons, maybe some operational and reporting requirements. But in most cases, consolidation, you know, does provide a big enough benefit to elect into it. The fourth point that I have here is net operating losses. Again, a pretty big difference from China, where you can only carry forward 5 years. The U.S., you can carry forward losses for 20 years. Obviously, there are some limitations and some restrictions associated with that. One of the probably more important, or one of the limitations that in practice I see more than others, is a limitation related to the acquisition of a company that has losses. And I know China tax law has a very similar provision under, I think it's called Circular 59. It's the special restructuring circular in China tax. The U.S. has a similar provision that we call Section 382. And basically what that provision says is, I can use a net operating loss to offset the income of another U.S. entity that's within consolidation, but that loss has to have been generated during the same period of time that the income was generated that the loss is being used to offset. So let me give you a very basic example to help you understand the issue that often comes up with this. So the rule says that if you acquire a U.S. company that has net operating losses, those losses are limited in terms of how much can be used in a given year. That is a function of the fair market value of the company that was acquired multiplied by what's called the long-term tax exempt rate, which is a rate that is issued by the IRS every month. Okay? So as an example, let's just say that you're a Chinese company, you have a U.S. subsidiary, your U.S. subsidiary is profitable, it's been a successful business, you're going to use that U.S. subsidiary to buy a U.S. target. And that U.S. target has net operating losses. But for commercial reasons, you want to make the acquisition because the target will be a complement to your business. So when you value that U.S. target, one of the things that you will do is you'll say, okay, how big are the net operating losses? And let's just say that the net operating losses are $20 million. Okay? You would say those losses are worth $20 million times the tax rate of 35%. Those losses are worth about $7 million to you because you can use those losses to offset the income of your already existing U.S. entity. Okay? Now let's walk through the limitation. $20 million of losses, and let's just say that the tax rate that you have to use is 1.5%. So $20 million times 1.5% is $300,000. Now what that means is that you can, up to $20 million of losses that you're effectively acquiring, you can only use $300,000 a year by virtue of this limitation. And then you couple with that the fact that you can only carry losses forward 20 years, so $300,000 times 20 years is $6 million. And some of those, and that's at the maximum, because some of those losses
may already be approaching the 20-year period. We don't know. So at the most, you're only going to be able to use $6 million of the $20 million of losses in that company. And the reason I bring that up as an example is because if you're doing a U.S. acquisition and you put a value towards the purchase price on those NOLs, you will grossly overstate your purchase price because you're going to suggest that you have $20 million of NOLs available, but only $6 million of those losses are actually of any use to you. $14 million of them would be of no use. And so I want to point that out because it's something that I've seen a lot during the course of my year, so I want to point that out. Now,